back to Check the Gate, a Film Lover's Deep Dive. I'm Burton, as always. I'm joined with Brandon.
Hello.
And MC Michael on the ones and twos.
Hell yeah, what's up?
Today, we are doing our final spooky film for October. We're doing the 1987 cult classic, The Lost Boys, which is about when a recently divorced mother and her two teenage boys move to a coastal town to stay with her father. It doesn't take long for the brothers to realize the area is a haven for something much more sinister.
In the murder capital of the world?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Santa Carla, not Clara.
Yeah.
And not even though it's also filmed out of Santa Cruz, it's a... Michael, this was your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit about it. What do you love?
Well, I feel like
why
is
this one?
Yeah, I feel like this is my besides the raging saxophone party.
Tim Capella, dude. Oof.
Damn, sweaty, just muscular, beautiful.
Oiled down.
I still believe.
Yeah. I feel like most of my answer is like, well, I watched this when I was younger, but I did, and I've seen this movie like probably 4 or 5 times, but all from when I was younger to like adulthood, and yeah, I don't know. I like it. I don't know why. It's just got a weird vibe, and it's like kind of the most consistent real life vampire sort of shtick. Like, I don't know. They all just blend in. They're just going around stealing movies and shit, you know, like or comics. Sorry,
yeah.
They're literally just fucking kids. I mean, like obviously they're adults playing teenagers, but like they're literally just fucking delinquents.
Yeah,
yeah, for real.
Just eating Chinese food. You know, hanging out in an old...
They're only noodles, Michael.
Yeah. How are those maggots, you know?
What?
This kid eats rice.
Were you distracted every time they say Michael in this movie? Because they literally say it 118 times.
Oh, yeah.
Just keep looking. What?
At first...
This other one's like, I got a tally.
Yeah.
Michael.
I have...
Michael!
Yeah, I have a big screen on my desk, and I had it split windowed. I had one to the right, and I was looking for something on the left, and every time I just kept finding myself, like, head just cocking to the right, so.
Well, this is, I mean, it's not a seminal movie for me, but, like, again, kind of like what you were saying, Michael, saw this at a young age. I mean, it's Joel Schumacher, too.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want about Joel Schumacher, but the dude's got a vibe. Like, he made Flatliners, also with Kiefer Sutherland. He made two of the greatest Batman movies of all time, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. Obviously a joke. Those are, I love those movies, but they are definitely, I think I was just born in that era. So it's just like, I hold those close to my heart, but.
Yeah. And see, that's why I love, Lost Boys so much is it's like the epitome of 80s. Like, I love it. Like it just reminds me of like, growing up in the 90s so much, and it's like that's why I love this movie.
And then also I know that Point Break is technically like I think it's 1990 that movie came out, but like you almost expect the Bodhi to also just be on that same beach, like happening all at the exact same time, just that out there fucking taking out beach parties while like two down. It's just like the Bodhisattva is out there surfing with Keanu.
Funny thing that you mentioned that movie. That is, or that was my dad's favorite movie of all time, Point Break. Can't tell you how many times I've seen it. Still a great movie.
is this a popular choice for you, Brandon? Not is this a popular choice, but is this a movie that you put on often, watch often?
No, but I've seen it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's a cult classic.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, it's the first of like 8 Corey Haim and Corey Feldman co-starring movies together, kind of kickstarting off that. I was honestly kind of surprised that this was so late because they did so many movies in like within like, what, 5 years of each other?
Yeah.
Just like, but then also we get a lot of great background. We have freaking Bill S. Preston from Bill and Ted in this movie. Just honestly, like playing a vampire that has like one line in this movie. The Kiefer Sutherland's like 3 cronies like barely talk. I read that like Kiefer Sutherland,
figures.
This was like, he is one of the, you know, obviously, like, he's, like, I guess you would say he's, like, the main villain in this movie, even though he's not really the big bad. He's, like, the main villain. Has, like, hardly any lines, but it's still, like, 10 times more lines than any of the other vampires there. So he was cool with that, because he's kind of a bit of a diva. But
yeah.
But, I mean, also, then you still got the look. Honestly, I feel like, and maybe it's because my wife and I are in the middle of, like, a pretty heavy Buffy the Vampire Slayer rewatch. Feels like the translation from vampires in this movie to Buffy is, like, 1-to-1. Like, the makeup is almost exactly identical. Everything, they're using the same phrases, vamping out. Which I doing a little research, found out that was, like, created in this movie. And now it's just a phrase that gets thrown out a lot. But I was like, I feel like Joss Whedon just, like, watched The Lost Boys a lot while writing Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But
possible, for sure. I mean, I told you my wife was on the Buffy binge, and I would poke my head in every now and then. I've never seen really a full episode. But I get the connections, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, this created... I feel like this was the kickoff of the vampire trope, you know, theme that runs all the way till today.
Dude, and then, like, so, like, this was the first time I noticed it, but, like, after they stake Bill S. Preston in the little cave, and his blood spews out, it gets all over, you know, Corey Feldman, and they go outside, like, the blood has, like, glitter and shit in it. And I was like... Oh, damn. Like, does this start glitter vampires? Is this how... Is Stephanie Meyer... I'm putting you on blast. The fuck is up with that?
That's a good point.
So watching it this time, I was like, man, I wonder if, like, is that canon somewhere? It's just like, oh, yeah, this... Because it's glittering from the sun or something. Yeah. But I was like, obviously that is just glitter in some cornstarch and shit. Corey Haim said it was, like, thick and, like, it was, like, very slimy and impossible to get off. So they were just covered in, like, this paste and glitter for, like, days.
Sticky.
Anything to get them off the sauce. There's a lot of background drug use happening during this movie.
Not surprising. It's pretty ragtag crew.
I mean, and then, yeah, it's... Also, you're just, like, right in the middle of the 80s where cocaine is in catering.
Yeah.
Corey Feldman, I had read, had got fired off this movie, who plays Edgar Frog, was fired because he was so high on cocaine, he couldn't stay awake during, like, table reads. Schumacher fired him, but then the next day he apologized, said he'd get right, and they hired him back on. So, like, the punishment lasted for a whole day.
Yeah. But, poor guy never seemed to get right.
Yeah. I mean, and then obviously Corey Haim kind of died tragically young. He was only 38. Had like nothing to his name and just like died of pneumonia. But I remember driving my sisters to school after I graduated and hearing on the radio that he passed away. I was like, oh, damn. But he is very good in this movie.
Oh, it's
just
like
the absolutely just the the annoying little brother, but then also like,
but he was so blanked. Like, but he was like, he was the annoying little brother, but he was like cool in his own way, you know, like,
yeah, like I wrote in my notes when he goes to the comic book store, they're trying to get him off, not get him off, but like send him off because he, you know, he's dressed like a prep and then he just like charms them by being a massive dork.
But even like they're like sweet clothes, he's like, yeah, you like these, like they're pretty fresh, huh? And like then he goes into his little comic book diatribe where he's like, oh no, these are all wrong, you can't do this,
you keeping this one here, we haven't even discovered red kryptonite yet.
So he's like, he's annoying,
you know,
but
stuff.
He's,
you know your stuff, all right,
but he's cool.
Yeah. He also looks like a dork in his clothes. I was like, he looks like a 1980s Sears catalog just puked all over him.
He was watching too much 80s MTV.
I believe it. He has like a poster of Rob Lowe like lifting his shirt up and everything.
Yeah, that so was funny. Like, I saw that.
Damn.
Too. It's like a giant poster too.
I looked it up because I was like, who is that? And I found out it was Rob Lowe, and Schumacher put it there because he had just done St. Elmo's Fire with Rob Lowe. So it was kind of like a nod to that. But in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, but you still have it like in a teenage boy. So like, what did you mean by that, Mr. Schumacher? I will say that this week, the Alamo Drafthouse is showing The Lost Boys in theaters.
Ooh.
And it's under the category Queer Film History 101. So, did you pick up on any of that subtext? Because I never have.
No.
But hearing that, I was like, oh, I should watch it with that in mind. And like, outside of the Rob Lowe poster, I didn't really pick up on any. I was like, man, I don't know. Anyway. Let's talk about this.
You could say Michael has a thing for...
famously, the woman in this movie, though. Star.
Well, but him and David kind of have a thing where they're like constantly trying to one up each other, but it's like
David does seem like super obsessed with him. Like, he's so, why are you so obsessed with me, dude?
Yeah, it is a little creepy, but I don't know. He was just trying to get the girl.
Mm-hmm. Mad Joey. Like I said, it's a 1987 film. Top three films, 1987. It's gonna be sound relatively familiar. Number three, Beverly Hills Cop 2. Number two, Fatal Attraction. And number one, Three Men and the Baby. Highest grossing film in 1987.
Wow. Really?
Yes. There's an episode that hasn't come out yet that also covers this year, and this is the exact same response that we all had. Was like, what is going on in 1987?
Three Men and a Baby. Did I have the same reaction?
Yeah.
Play it back.
Play it forward.
That's,
I guess, 'cause we,
that's,
you know.
Still gets me. Gets me every time.
And in, you know, 10 episodes when we cover this year again, it'll get me again.
Yeah.
A ticket cost in 1987, $3.91, which is equivalent to $11.05 our money. The budget for this film, $8.5 million. Peanuts, I say. Which is equivalent to about $24 million, our money. The box office, just a meager $32.5 million.
What's the DVD sales?
Yeah, no kidding. This, I think that's why it's a cult classic. That isn't it kind of what defines cult classic, when it like gets that new life on DVD?
Yeah, or has a bigger following than like what the critics say.
So I will say that my DVD is the special edition Death by Stereo 30-year anniversary edition.
Death by Stereo.
Yeah. So I guess I could listen to like commentary.
It's a great, great line in the movie too.
It is, yeah. That whole back and forth, you miss, sucker.
Yeah.
Only once, pal. Anyway, $32.5 million is equivalent to $91.8 million our money. And this film, if you can believe it, was nominated for 0 Academy Awards. I will say, I know this song wasn't written for the movie, but we should have just nominated Cry Little Sister, guys. If you're going to play it 18 times in a movie, you got to have an Oscar nom for it. I mean, come on, what are we doing?
Yeah, great song.
That is... It is... Whenever I hear the phrase The Lost Boys, I immediately cry out, "Cry, little sister!" Because... Oh, my computer just told me it's reducing noise.
Yeah.
Sorry, computer. literally the soundtrack to this movie. The song plays a million times during it, during important parts of this movie. I do love like how they're clearly just rocking a helicopter aerial shots over like this boardwalk, giving you like that crazy like vampire flying. We're going over this boardwalk in Santa Cruz. We see Kiefer Sutherland and his posse are traipsing through a boardwalk midway. They're just jumping onto moving carousels, trying to start what seem like gang fights, just like in the middle of a carousel. A very portly security guard comes up behind Kiefer Sutherland, who we find out his name is David. Wraps his billy club around his throat and says, "I told you never to come back to this boardwalk." Okay, We'll get out of here. No big deal. We go back to that. Again, it looks like they're just flying a helicopter because we don't have drones. With this. It's obviously too big for a crane shot. But that helicopter looks like it's like coming like right down on top of the security guard who obviously it's the vampire flying POV. We see him turn around. He sees something. He takes off running. And right when he opens his car door, he gets sucked up into the sky, screaming, ripping the car door off the car, by the way. Guy had a strong ass grip. Sometime later, it doesn't really tell us whether this is the next day or not. It's just, this is kind of just being like, hey, welcome to Santa Carla. Shit's crazy here. Go down
murder
to the boardwalk.
Capital of the world.
Jason Patrick, which by the way, Michael, second movie that you've chosen starring Jason Patrick.
Sick.
Michael's got a type.
Yeah. I did it on purpose. Yep.
It's only been two movies. Yeah. We've each chosen like 14, 15 movies, and this is like,
they're on to me. Leaving Easter eggs.
It's going back to the well.
I will say you are running out of Jason Patrick movies, so no.
Yeah.
Now
Speed since you're onto my
cruise
set,
control.
You know?
Geronimo.
You know? The like three episodes of Entourage. That's it. I'm tapped on Jason Patrick movies.
Yep.
Anywho, Jason Patrick, we're supposed to believe is a teenager, looks like a 35-year-old man. And his younger brother, played by Corey Haim, and his mother, played by Diane Wiest, are moving to beautiful Santa Carla. We get that great shot of them pulling past the billboard for Jason Patrick to like look behind it, and it says written in graffiti, "The murder capital of the world." And they're moving in with Diane Wiest's father, their grandpa, who is a weird-ass dude.
He's so funny.
He's clearly just like an old man who's been a little alone for a little too long. Out there in his like little, almost like a lodge compound-ish kind of thing. The house is just full of taxidermy.
Yeah,
obviously,
he's a taxidermy expert.
Obviously, the Corey Haim thinks it's fucking creepy. It's also like stage super creepy, but it's also not even like just deer and small game. He also has like lions. And
yeah,
shit
it's
in there, like
rodents and weird things that don't need to be stuffed.
He's got a fish on like a big mouth billy bass, but like it looks like a trout, but it also is like 8 feet long. He has one room that's just full of taxidermied horns that I'm sure will not play a factor any later in this movie whatsoever. Grandpa's like, I got two rules in here. You know, it's like, stay the fuck out of the taxidermy room. And also, second shelf of the fridge is mine. Don't touch my Dr. Pepper or my root beer or my Oreos. And it's like, the shelf latch up. It says, like, old fart on it.
Yeah.
He goes, don't touch my second shelf. Like, the kids, like, look out the window. They see, like, marijuana leaves growing in through the, through the kitchen. And Jason Patrick's, like, miming, like, old man stoned.
Getting high.
I love that he's like breaking down like on the mail. He's like, when you get the TV guide, you're going to see the sticker over this. You're going to feel the need to tear the sticker. I implore you don't do that because it tears the cover and I don't want you to tear the cover. Corey Haim's excited. Cool. You get a TV guide. That means there's a TV. And he goes, what do I need a TV for? If I have a TV guide, I can just read what's on TV.
I just read it.
Your dork closes the door. And that's when we get taken to the most iconic beach party, boardwalk party of all time. While a very sexy Tim Capella in tight leather pants and chains hanging down, shirtless, just covered in oil, slams on the saxophone while singing I Still Believe. My one regret in life is that he played a show at the Shredder in Idaho about 5 years ago, and I didn't go. Guy that you all know, buddy of mine, Travis, was like, this is not even a once in a lifetime thing. This is a will never happen again. And I was like, well, that's you just defined a once in a lifetime. But and then we just didn't go. And to this day, every time I watch this movie, I'm like, I stopped believing. I do love how like he is like somehow like an image, like a very focal image of this movie, and this is the only time he's in the movie. He is not the guy who sings Cry Little Sister. He's just having his own little moment. Joel Schumacher let him have his 5 minutes, and he's made a career out of it. And God bless that man.
Yeah. And those biceps.
I love that, like, he's just up there playing. It's like a, it's, this is like post-apocalyptic Mad Maxian, like,
yeah,
barrels on fire while he's up there playing, like, music, saxophone. Guys are, like, headbanging to this music while, like, Jason Patrick sees Jamie Gertz, and he's just like, oh, I'm going to find the love of my life at this Tim Capella concert. It's just something about it just feels so, like, post-apocalyptic. He spies Jamie Gertz, goes to her. He's clearly fallen immediately in love with her, is trying to track her down. This is happening while Diane Wiest is noticing that to a video store is a help wanted sign, where she goes and she meets Rory Gilmore's grandpa, who plays, his name is Max in this movie, and he is running this video store and he's looking for help. We get Kiefer Sutherland and his crew show up. He kind of kicks them out. Hey, what do they say about you people being in here? You damn kids. Shakes his fake cane at them. And they're just like, sorry, old man. My bad. They kind of leave. This part of the movie, it's just like we're meeting all these characters that are going to be pivotal points. And it's just like, that's like right when Corey Haim's also meeting, you know, Edgar and Alan Frog, Corey Feldman, and the other guy whose name nobody knows.
I didn't realize they were brothers.
Yeah. Like, can't tell? They look exactly the same. I will say Corey Feldman looks like he's 12 years old in this movie.
Yes.
And then so reading that he already had like an insane cocaine addiction. Yes. Is like,
it's even wilder. Yeah.
I don't exactly know how old he is in this movie. But, I mean, he's probably early 20s, right? He just looks so tiny.
Yeah, he is.
Goonies is already a thing.
Yeah.
Because you can actually see a copy of The Goonies in the video store. Like we said, they try to kick him out of this comic book store because he looks like a elitist douchebag, only for him to drop some comic book knowledge on them, to which they respect him enough to hand him a comic book called Destroy All Vampires, to which he's like, I don't like scary comics, man. I gotta keep a nightlight on if I read those. I like how, like, there are those times where Corey Haim's, like, trying to pass off like he's a cool guy who knows what he's talking about. But then at the end of the day, he's like, I still take bubble baths and I'm scared of the dark.
Singing in the bubble bath, too, nonetheless.
I ain't got a fan.
That was a great scene.
Jason Patrick follows Jamie Gertz, and she sees that she is climbing onto the back of Keith Sutherland's motorcycle. He kind of makes eye contact with them, smirks, and they peel off. They're driving the motorcycles down the beach of the boardwalk, where we find another one of those, the punk that they were trying to fight on the carousel. Him and his girlfriend, they attack them and they kill them. We get more of that great shots of like the tops of the roof of their car getting peeled off, and like that camera shot of them right above, like there's like a shit ton of wind blasting them.
Yeah,
a giant spotlight, and then, you know, obviously what's a snow, they have been moited. The next day, Haim goes back to the comic book shop, and the frogs also keep trying to talk to him about the Destroying All Vampires and saying that you gotta read it, even though I know you're scared of it, but this is your survival guide to surviving Santa Carla. Jason Patrick runs into Jamie Gertz and they kind of hit it off. Keith Sutherland gets a little bit jealous, you can tell. He's like, immediately tells her, Star, you know, we find her name, Star, get on. You, Michael, found out your name's Michael. I'm going to never stop saying it. Michael. Do you know how to get to this bluff? And he's like, my motorcycle can't beat yours. I don't know. We're not trying. And he's like, hey, not trying to race. Just want to make sure you can keep up. He's like, cool. Found some friends. You got to find a family, you know, find your tribe, yeah. Guys. They take off down the beach. We get this fog rolling in. We see their motorcycle bikes are getting lost in the fog. Patrick's still trying to keep up, but suddenly Keith is like next to him now. We realize something weird is happening because obviously he was in front. Now he's next to him. We see that this cliff is getting closer. They're playing chicken with the cliff. Patrick kind of wusses out, shreds out. Hey, man, what are you trying to do? You're trying to get me killed? And he's like, no, I don't want to kill you. I want you to be part of our family, the Nielsen family. Come join us. To which he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, hey, come back to our cool cave. It's like they said it's like an abandoned resort hotel, but it's like built into a cliffside.
Yeah, the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. That's all you get.
But it's like all ended up. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. That didn't make any sense. Because part of me is like, oh, I must have missed the exterior, and then all the exterior shots of are them just in the cliffside. Back home, Corey Haim is like stress reading the vampire comic book now. He's freaking out because obviously scary. Like his mom's like, okay, lights out. And he goes, Mom, I need you to close the closet door. There could be monsters in there. She goes, yeah, all right, I get it. No big deal. Grandpa comes in, tries to comfort him by giving him that scary ass beaver taxidermy.
Yeah, just, and he puts it like on his nightstand, like staring right.
It'll keep you safe. It'll keep you safe at night. They leave, and he's like, yeah, no, fuck this. And he goes and hides it in his closet. Back at the Vampire Coven Nest compound, Kiefer and the gang are like, hey, we got you some Chinese food. Go ahead, have some rice. Has some rice, to which he's like, then, how are the maggots, Michael? Yeah. Oh, good one. Yuck, 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 yuck. Looks down, box full of maggots, spits them out, blah, and he goes, what are you talking? Michael, they're only rice. It's just rice, Michael. Michael? Stars in the background yelling, stop, leave him alone. He goes, here, try the noodles instead. Looks in, it's full of worms. He goes, I don't want to eat that. There's worms. And he goes, like, eats the noodles like a fucking psychopath. He goes, they're just noodles, Michael.
He even tells him, no, don't do it.
I'm saving you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking Marco went out and got Chinese food, but he got two boxes of maggots and worms. What a joker. Kiefer offers Jason Patrick, you know, he busts out the giant bottle. Like, he's like, right, we got company. We got to bust out the fine china. We get that bottle. It's got like bedazzled and jeweled on the side. And he goes, take a swig of this. It's the good stuff. Star says, don't drink it, it's blood. And Michael is like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Clearly, I thought they were maggots and worms, and it wasn't. You're saying it's blood, obviously it's not. He rolls his eyes, takes a big fat swig, and immediately, Cry Little Sister starts playing. As we get like a like a montage of them just like dancing in front of the fire. Jason Patrick's head is hurting.
This was a wild initiation.
Yeah.
Like,
they literally jumped him into the game.
Yeah, for real.
They said, you drank the special sauce.
Yep.
We had our little dance. Now we're going to take you someplace really cool. They take him to like some railroad train crossing bridge. And are like, hey, check this out. And they, one by one, start jumping off the bridge, to which we see them hanging now by the wires and beams down below. Jason Patrick doesn't feel very confident about jumping and catching himself, so he just kind of climbs down, grabs onto the beams and hangs there. To which, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's like, are you having fun yet? And he's like, I mean, I've had better times just hanging out. And he's like, obviously, we're going to have a lot more fun because the train's now coming. And as the train is on the bridge, it starts vibrating the bridge so much that one by one, they start falling. Bill and Ted fall. The other two guys whose names are ever mentioned? Don't know. I know they have names in the movie. Like, their actual cast have names, but couldn't tell you what they are. Kiefer's like, hey, don't worry. We'll be waiting down there for you. He lets go. Patrick's freaking out because he thinks that he just watched them fall to their deaths. He's able to hold on the entire time while the train is crossing. He can hear them down below. There's like that fog mist right below him, so he can't see anybody. He can hear that however far they fell, he can still hear them. He finally loses his grip and falls. And he falls so far, we get like that weird slow motion where like we don't know if maybe he's flying or hovering or if he truly is falling. He falls directly into his bed back home.
Lucky shot.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, he's lucky. The bed wasn't very big. He just had like a twin.
So I know. I still want to know where everybody else went. Did they all land in their own beds too? Or like...
Well, where we know where their beds are, aren't there?
Yeah.
His mom calls him in that morning. We find out it's like 2 p.m. His mom calls him. Jason Patrick looks hella hungover. He had a hell of a night. He came home sometime in the night. He's been sleeping all day. He needs sunglasses in the house now. He's got that really cool earring now because he's now part of a gang. Mom calls him and says, "Hey, honey, I'm having dinner with my boss, so I need you to babysit young Corey Haim." To which I like, he's like, "He's old enough to stay home by himself, Mom." And even Corey Haim's like, "I don't need you watching." He's like, "Shut up!" Like, they're having like that sibling, "Fuck you, man. I know I don't want to watch you either," kind of thing.
I don't need a babysitter.
To which she pretty much says, "Hey, listen, you've been out all night. You come home. I have my own thing to do. Your grandpa's going to go stuff an old widow." He keeps talking about how he's going to go bring a stuffed animal and then stuff an old widow neighbor. She's like, "Your brother needs somebody at home to watch." That night, after Grandpa leaves, because he's got a really hot date, and he's like taking like that stuffed... It's like a dog, too, like a stuffed dog.
Yeah. Maltese pooper.
Yeah. We get like a weird scene where like we can hear Kiefer and Co., their motorcycles and their high beams are blasting in through the car. It's loud as shit. Corey Haim's freaking out. Jason Patrick opens the door and there's nobody out there. Corey Haim's like, "What's going on?" He goes, "Hey, just go take a bath." And he's like, "You got it. I love
a good bubble bath."
Got to him in his bubble bath, like shampooing his hair, just rocking out, bubbling it up. He's got the dog in there. Meanwhile, Jason Patrick is having problems. He starts getting them hunger pangs, if you know what I'm talking about. Opens up the fridge, grabs the milk. The milk doesn't agree with them. "Mom, is this whole? Gross." He drops it, starts convulsing on the ground a little bit. We get like a, honestly, kind of like a great horror shot of like him standing at the bottom of the stairs, and the shadow just has him blurred out, so it's just his silhouette. We don't know what his face looks like. Are we like, "Ooh, does he have a crazy vampire face? Is it just his face?" He makes his way up the stairs, stands at the door of the bathroom, which we keep cutting back and forth of him ominously standing outside the bathroom, getting ready to open the door, while Corey Haim is just jamming out in the tub, while the dog starts to sense that something bad is happening. Patrick opens the door, only for the dog to immediately attack him. He flies down the stairs. Corey Haim freaks out. What's going on? Dries himself off, puts a towel on, runs downstairs, to which Patrick says, "Don't come close to me, because I'm a goddamn bloodsucker." The dog bit his hand. He's bleeding from the hand. "What'd you do to my dog, you asshole?" And he goes, "No, the dog bit me. He was trying to protect you." To which Corey Haim's like, "Oh my god, the Frog Brothers of all people are correct. We got a vamp in this house." Patrick starts like levitating because he doesn't understand how his powers work. Luckily, the mom calls at that exact moment. Is like, "Hey, I'm about to meet Max." Corey Haim's like, "You gotta fucking come home, Mom. Jason Patrick's trying to kill me. Michael's trying to kill me." He's like levitating outside, but he grabs like the other phone hook, and that's the only thing that's holding him inside. He's also yelling on the phone, "No, it's cool, Mom. Everything's fine. Just going through changes at home. nothing to see here." The mom freaks out because Corey Haim starts yelling, "He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me." To which she immediately starts taking off to her car. We get that great image of like Max seeing her outside, just like frantically running to the car. And he's like,
just ghosted him.
Mom makes it home hella quick, by the way. They're like out in the middle of nowhere, it seems. Like when you see the aerial shots, like they are nowhere near the beach. And she is like constantly at the beach, whether she's at like the pier where she works. Max seems to live off by the beach. Regardless, she makes it home hella quick. Corey Haim, like Jason Patrick and Corey Haim have a little conversation being like, hey, I'm your brother. We'll figure this out. Lie to mom. We'll get to the bottom of this. We'll fix this. So which Corey is immediately like, sorry, mom. I read a comic book and I got scared. And she was like, are you fucking kidding me?
And you said you didn't need a babysitter.
I finally found a man. And and then obviously she's just like, okay, that's fine, whatever. Here's a scene that I wish was not in this movie. We then cut to Max coming home. And he has his dog there. Hey, how you doing, Thorn? Oh, got stood up again, you know, kind of thing. We get the motorcycle lights roll in, and we hear the hooping and hollering, so we know it's Kiefer and Co. So we're like, okay, he's cooked. He's dead, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, when you see him again, your brain goes, oh, they turned him. He's a vampire. That's not the case. But, like, when I see it for the first time, I now know he's a vampire. I know they have that whole thing, the dinner scene.
Yeah.
But I wish they never had that scene. That way there feels like there is more of a twist at the end when we find out that, spoiler alert, Max is the head vampire this whole time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, totally. I agree with you. It's like they're alluding to something that shouldn't have been alluded to and just let played out.
Yeah, because, I mean, then it is... I mean, obviously, the second that they kill Kiefer Sutherland and nothing happens, there's only one person left in this movie, so you immediately go, oh, okay, well, it's obviously Max.
Yeah.
But, like, you still have that twist happen. I don't know. I'm also speaking as somebody who has seen this movie tens of times, you know? So now it's just like, I'm picking up on things that I already know play out. And I'm like, if you cut this scene, maybe it does this. But at the same time, it's like, do I even remember what my brain said when I saw that Max was the head man? You know, all I know, I'm like 7 years old being like, oh my God, Rory's grandpa was the vampire the whole time. Jason Patrick sneaks out of the house when the mom gets home, and, you know, obviously in Corey Haim wise, he wants to head back to the abandoned hotel inside the cave cliffside where he sees Star, and he wants to know what is happening with him. What did you do to me? To which she immediately distracts him by having 80s steamy sex montage. While Cry Little Sister is, again, playing over. So we're having 86 to that movie. At sunrise, Kiefer and Co. return back. Patrick wakes up, realizes that his hand is healed from his dog bite. He's still able to walk in the sunlight, even though it does seem to have some sort of effect on him. He obviously has to have sunglasses on. He feels and seems very weak when he's outside, but he's not bursting into flames or anything. His mother confronts him when he gets home, pretty much about him having his dickish behavior, to which he's just kind of like, Mom, I got bigger things to deal with right now. He goes inside and Grandpa sees him and he goes, looks like I'm not the only one who got lucky last night. Oh, Grandpa. Mom comes back inside, grabs a bottle of wine, takes Corey Haim with her, and he's like, what are we doing here? We're going to Max's house. And he goes, I need to give him this bottle of wine because you ruined our date last night. I have to apologize, and hopefully he still wants to see me. So honestly, kid, you should be the one apologizing, not me. And he goes, all right, Mom, get inside. Go in there. Go get her.
You're all right.
She goes inside. He opens up his comic book that is giving him nightmares. In quotes. If the mom would be like, why are you still reading that? You're doing this to yourself. To which he reads the word that vampires also have protectors that watch them while they sleep, known as hellhounds. Cut to Max's dog Thorn going ballistic, flipping out, full on charging Diane Wiest. She freaks out, drops the bottle of wine, tries to climb over the fence. Dog snags her dress. Corey Haim pulls her over just over. She's freaking out, crying. What the fuck just happened? At the Frogs comic book store, Haim tells them, I think I know who the head vampire is. He has himself a hellhound. We only see him at night when we're on the boardwalk. I'm pretty sure he's the head vampire, to which the Frogs let him know, if you kill the head vampire, any vampire that isn't a full vampire, because Jason Patrick has not had his first kill yet, he is just a halfsies vampire. Any halfsies vampire will be cured if the head vampire is killed. I said the word vampire like 85 times in that one sentence. Luckily, Max is coming over for dinner that night. He's coming over. Corey Haim decides to invite the Frog Brothers over for dinner. Jason Patrick is trying to sneak away, to which he opens the door and Max is right in front of him. He stupidly invites him into the house. Duh. As the man of the house, I will not come in until I am invited. And I'm like, bro's a vampire. I see what you just did there.
Yeah.
Why the hell do I care? Come on in. Max comes in, gives mom some flowers. My dog apologizes for being an asshole. Hey, but he does promise to be on his best behavior next time you come over, if you'll grant me a next time. I do love this dinner scene where it's just obviously the Frogs and Corey Haim are just like studying every single thing that Max is doing. Would you like some fresh ground Parmesan on your spaghetti? To which we find out he just like grated garlic and put it all over his spaghetti. Max takes a bite, oh my God, what is this? And he goes, why? Do you not like garlic? And he's like, I mean, I like garlic, but this is like whole garlic.
This is freshly grated garlic.
I just put an entire garlic clove in my mouth. No. To which they throw water on him. Nothing happens. They tell him, oh, is it the holy water doesn't burn or anything? They turn the light off on him. He goes, oh, sorry, mom, must have been a breaker. Only for them to turn the light back on with a mirror in front of Max. Oh, my God. Max, you know, is startled. We see his reflection. Max is like, all right, I know what's going on here. And they're like, oh, fuck, you do? He's like, yes. I am not trying to replace your father. You know, he does the whole stepdad speech. I'm not trying to replace your father. Nobody could ever replace your father, even though he sounds like a fucking terrible person.
Yeah.
Your mother is divorcing him, and she's taking her children away from him. Regardless, I'm not here to replace your father, and I will not take your mother away from you. Diane Wiest, how about tomorrow we do dinner one more time at my house? I'm cooking. Keep your nasty child away from me. She's like, awesome. Yes, that sounds perfect. I'll keep my nasty child away from you. At the boardwalk, Jason Patrick confronts Kiefer Sutherland, only for Kiefer to take him to another beach party. He's like, I love how they're like hiding in that tree, but the tree is like 4 foot tall. So it's not like they're actually hiding in a tree overlooking the beach. They're just behind like a dead tree shrub. They're like, you got to check this out. Initiation is over. Now it's time to join the club. And they immediately turn on their vamp. They vamp out, as they say. They got the great vampire makeup, where now they just look like a bunch of who's down in Whoville.
Yeah.
Their nose is crinkled up. And but they got like the two-layered teeth. They attack the beach party, killing them. Honestly, some pretty like beautiful, gory. Like they're like that one shot of him like taking a bite of like the side of that bald dude's head.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty rad. And just like spurts like a grape. And it's like, you know, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. They attack the beach party, kill everyone. As Patrick looks on in horror, Kiefer Sutherland says, now you know what we are. Now you know what you are. You'll never grow old and you'll never die, but you'll need to feed. And Patrick's like, ah, like terrified. You turned me into a murderer. back at home, Haim tells Patrick, hey, pretty much just a scene that I think could be cut, not because it spoils anything, but because we get two people say the exact same thing happening. Corey Haim says, you have to figure out who the head vampire is. If you figure out who the head vampire is, you kill him, we get you're cured, perfect. Only for Star to then come over and say, what you are can be reversed. You just, and we're like, girl, we already know.
We know. But I think that didn't she say, like, explain, like, that's how her situation is?
Yeah, because she's also a halfsies. And then we also have, like, that, like, truly little boy. He dressed like Gavroche from Les Mis. That's also just running around. We see he's the kid on the back of, like, the milk carton. Saying, hey, this isn't, we can reverse this. All we have to do is kill the head vampire. And we're like, got it. Three times the charm. Now I know. It's in here forever now. Haim calls the frogs to come over. Because Jason Patrick is going to take us to our vampire lair. Where we can see, obviously, it's where we see vampires are hanging right above. Like, they're literally sleeping upside down. Hands over their chests. Patrick is indisposed with Star because she's trying to get the little Gavroche boy out of there. So it's just the frogs and Corey Haim hanging out. They don't know who the head vampire is. I like how they're like, we don't know who the head vampire is. And the camera immediately points at Kiefer Sutherland. The audience is like, oh, it's that guy. Pick him.
It must be him.
Only for them to be like, well, we can't start here. We read left to right, so we need to start on the left and work our way right. So I guess we'll have to kill them all. Like, Corey Feldman's like talking like this the whole movie.
And like he's dressed like mini Rambo.
I was going to say he's dressed like Charlie Sheen in Hot Shots Part 2. Yeah. Like he looks like he's dressed like Charlie Sheen, who's dressed like a costume of Rambo. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Hot Shots. I haven't seen that movie in forever.
They climb up, they pull out the stake, and they stake Bill S. Preston, and immediately the blood starts spraying out of him like a fountain, like beautiful gore.
Oh.
He starts freaking out, vamping out. The other vampires wake out. What the fuck? What the fuck? They take off running, because obviously they've only killed one, but obviously they're awake now. We get Kiefer Sutherland chase them a bit, grabs Corey Haim's leg, tries to pull him back in. Unfortunately, he gets out just enough that I loved this touch. Like, obviously his hand kind of like lights on fire because the sunlight hits it, and he like pulls back and recoils, and then we get like the one tear come down Kiefer's face. It's like, ow.
That hurt.
just enough to be like, part of me is like, is he sad because his buddy just died? Or is he sad because, like, he... Ow, that fucking hurt, man. Like,
that was a nasty sunburn.
We get them in the car. Like, we gotta get the fuck out of here now. We only killed one. Plan A, we failed. Guess we gotta go to Plan B. So we're gonna have the frogs and Haim do some mission prep. Like, I love how they go. We need to do this before sundown. Because in 2.5 hours, they know that we did this. They're gonna come looking for us. The S ends tonight. So they go to like a church. They start filling up canteens and like squirt guns with holy water.
The bathtub full of garlic.
Yeah. Well, second movie in a row, by the way, that we have people home aloneing their house.
Yeah.
Big theme in these horror movies. Big theme. They're filling up the bathtub with the holy water, and then they're like throwing the garlic in there. That way it's nice and fermented in with each other. At sundown, Kiefer and Co. wake up and fly over to the house where, guys, they left the flippin' dog out there. Corey Haim
goes to this.
Yeah, God. They do this in Signs, too. Oh, we forgot the dogs are outside.
Yeah, it's a common theme.
Yeah. This dog survives, though. We can say that. Signs kills two dogs. This movie, zero. they've run outside. They get the dog in just in time. Thank God they did, because this dog immediately dispatches a vampire right away. I will say, that I checked the timer. This movie has like 8 minutes left.
Yeah.
And we still have three vampires that we know about and a head vampire. Like, this movie's like, we got to wrap it up, guys. We said 97 minutes.
We got to go.
They get the dog in the house just in time. Obviously, the vampires, they come in through the chimney. By the way, nobody fucking invited them in. What's happening? Why make rules if we're not going to
enforce them?
Or are they saying that if you're invited, that's when the powers go away? In this movie, are they still able to come into your home, but they're full vampire powers? I don't know. What I'm saying?
Maybe.
The answer to me, my question is, don't worry about it.
Maybe it's the threshold of the door. So they went in through the fireplace.
Santa style. Santa's a vampire. That makes sense. That's why he can live forever.
Krampus.
And he sees me when I'm sleeping.
Creeper.
And maybe he just assumes when I'm awake because it's daytime,
Fair point.
Yeah. Vamps are now in the house. I like how we get the first one immediately attacks them in the bathroom, to which they're like, careful, we got water with garlic. And he goes, garlic won't hurt me. And he goes, it's holy water, bitch. Splashes him in the face. It burns him. The dog fucking tackles him. I guess dog piles him. he goes flying backwards right into the tub. And he turns into a nice, beautiful goo that gets into all the pipes, causing all the pipes to explode with nasty vampire blood. This is like right out of The Evil Dead.
Yeah, the best part, though, is like he like is underneath the water, submerged. And then he like comes up like the last ditch effort, and he goes back in and his whole head just like explodes just like in the water. I was like, oh, that was cool.
Another vampire attacks Corey Haim, flies up in the sky, starts beating the shit out of him, only for Corey Haim to pull out his gun, his little squirt gun. Just like little squirts and ah, fuck. Obviously full of holy water. He drops him down. Corey Haim busts out his bow and arrow. As the vampire's jumping, he shoots the arrow. Vampire goes limp. Hits the ground. Lifeless. You alright? He starts walking over towards him. Vampire jumps up. You miss, sucker! I love it. Only once, pal. Shoots him with the arrow. Goes through him. He goes flying back in to their surround stereo system that electrifies him until he explodes, pops like a zit, like his head just to which Corey Haim hits us with the beautiful line, death by stereo. Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
I want my MTV. R.I.P. Is it officially off the air now?
I believe so.
Oh. I didn't know if it was holding out till December.
I mean, we can only watch so many episodes of ridiculousness.
Yeah, but where are they going to air now?
Nothing.
CMT?
YouTube.
Yeah. Honestly, I liked Ridiculousness better when it was just Tosh.0. But
yeah.
Anyway, I was kind of hoping Kurt Loder would sign off one more time. only Kiefer is left now. And he's now fucking with Jason Patrick. Patrick decides to go full vamp mode as the two start fighting in the air. Kiefer kind of breaks them into that old taxidermy room, the old horn room. Who could have predicted this? Hmm. Tries to fling him into it, only for Jason Patrick to grab the door frame. Somehow is able to finagle some sort of move that he goes from letting go, giving up full control, but is tilts his body enough that he grabs Kiefer and throws him directly into some horns, impaling him immediately.
Vampire jujitsu.
A burst of light appears in the room. Cry Little Sister plays again. So we're like, the curse is broken. The head vampire is killed. We did it. Hip hip hooray. He doesn't explode, by the way. Just lays there dead. Is he dead? Guess you have to wait for the sequel.
Yeah, didn't they make two of them?
I think there's like three, yeah. The last movie the Coreys did together was a 2008, like, The Lost Boys, I think The Tribe is what it was called. Have you ever seen any of the sequels?
I think I saw the second one, but I don't know. I don't even remember it, so that's the extent of it.
Did you see or know any about the sequels, Michael?
I might have stumbled upon them when I was looking on where to watch this, but no, I've never seen them.
Those were like early Redbox.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking Redbox.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
The frogs and Haim come into the living room, see a dead Kiefer. Jason Patrick grabs Star. He's still got his vampire face on. He says, "Don't let them see me like this. I can't let them see me like this." No, so something didn't work. We killed him, but I'm still the same. And Star's like, "Yeah, I feel the same too." He's like, "Look at my face. We know." Only for we hear a car door. Mama's home. And she's brought Max. Max comes in. He goes in the room. He sees Kiefer Sutherland dead. Looks like he goes and checks for his pulse. Don't know why. Vampires don't have pulses. Sees he's dead. The mom's like, "What the fuck happened here? The house is a mess." Max turns around, like, really casually takes his glasses off and kind of apologizes. "I'm sorry, Diane Wiest. Unfortunately, this is my fault. My boys, you know, they got a little carried away." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, these are my boys. Honestly, I thought if, you know, I could turn your sons, you know, we could still be together forever. I got a thing for you." His, like, face goes all vampire mode. He's like, "I still would very much like to be with you, if that's okay with you." And she's like, what the fuck?
No.
Jason Patrick comes around the corner and he goes, "Hey, I didn't invite you in." And I was like, "Oh, fuck." I was waiting for, like, some guitar music to start hitting.
He should have said, "I came in through the chimney."
He's like, "Ho, ho, ho, bitch." they're setting up this massive fight. Only for them to, like, pretty much just, like, lock arms, and then you hear Grandpa's horn. Grandpa drives his truck through the house wall. We see early in the movie that he's installing these giant wooden stake posts in his yard. He apparently broke through one, because one goes flying through the house, slams itself into Max. Max has been staked as he goes flying into the chimney and explodes like crazy. I love how, like, the dust has settled. Like, Max is dead. Jason Patrick's like, "I'm cured. I'm cured." Star and little Gavroche are like, "We're cured. We're cured." And the frogs are, like, looking around, and Feldman's like, "How much do you think we should charge them for this?"
Yeah.
Grandpa just, like, casually gets out of the car, closes the door. Diane Weiss is like, "Dad, are you okay?" Goes and grabs, like, a fucking tall ass root beer. "One thing about living in Santa Carla, I just couldn't stomach. All the damn vampires."
You're like, "What, Grandpa, you knew?
God, you could have saved us so much time.
Why'd you give me that fucking beaver?"
"Yeah, give me a crucifix." "Yeah,
some water gun full of holy water."
"Yeah, you don't need that stuff. You kids these days and your squirt guns. Back in my day, we had slingshots." "Yeah. We used to go like this with water. Get the tips of your... You ever get the tips of your fingers wet? And you just, like..."
"Flick it.
Flick it like this. Flick it." "We didn't need no squirt guns."
Anywho, they fucking wrapped the movie on a laugh line, guys. "Cry, little sister." I love it. It's a phenomenal movie.
Fun movie.
Gets my goat every time. It really makes me want to, like, watch a bunch of those, like, late 80s, early 90s, like, Joel Schumacher movies.
Bill, like, and Ted.
Have you ever seen Flatliners?
Yes.
Have you, Michael?
Negative, Ghost Rider. I only know about the band.
Kiefer Sutherland, Oliver Platt, Julia Roberts, somebody else too, But is it Kevin Bacon also? All of them, like, kind of like right before they, like, blow up. They're, like, college students that are, like, killing themselves. Like, they're flatlining and then want the people to revive them because they're, like, studying. I feel like they're studying something of what happens when you die, like, is an afterlife kind of thing.
Yeah.
But everybody who gets brought back starts, like, seeing, like, ghosts and shit. Like, so it kind of takes, like, a horror-ish kind of turn. Fun movie, too. Kind of, like, in the same vein. Like, if you enjoyed this, you would enjoy that kind of thing. Kiefer Sutherland is, like, a fucking psycho in that movie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that one again. It's been a while.
It's a blast. It's been a while. But it was a fun one, Michael. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good pick.
Yeah. It was fun to revisit, too.
Oh. For sure.
One of these days, we're going to do a 90s movie, guys. I can feel it in my bones. Like,
I know.
For whatever reason, we're like fucking allergic to the 90s.
I feel like we're close. Like, somebody's going to pull the trigger and just, like, finally pull that 90s movie out of their ass, and we're going to... No. We're going to love it.
Well, do we want to find out if we're going to choose a 90s movie right now? Because we got some holiday movies to pick right now, guys.
Oh, shit. I'm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing four. Obviously, there's only three of us. I don't know how we're going to establish a fourth movie. Unless there's one that we can all agree on that's just like, oh, yeah, why aren't we doing that one? Or should we just play It's a Wonderful Life from the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, you old building and loan.
That's a throwback.
That was 5 years ago.
I was going to say, that was one of the like the first ones we did.
That was our first Christmas.
Wow.
Brandon, why don't you go ahead and go first, since I'm looking at my camera here, you, Michael, myself. What is your first film you would like to do? Do you have a rating system, a metric? You said it was hard picking.
Yeah, so I'm not doing like your typical Christmas movie, like more of a touch of Christmas. You know, it's not necessarily a themed. So I'm gonna go Batman Returns.
Oh,
whoa!
90s.
That's been a bit.
1992, we did it, guys.
Yeah.
Batman Returns, fucking A.
Yeah, I'm excited. So excited.
Do you have any honorable mentions, just in case we have those on our list too?
Yeah, it was gonna be Home Alone, another 90s movie.
Okay.
See what I did there.
I did. Is Home Alone 90s?
1990.
Oh,
just made the cut. Okay. All right, Michael. What say you?
Funny enough, I was going to choose Home Alone, so let's do it.
Yeah!
Home Alone.
Come on, Bert.
Do you have any honorable mentions?
I had Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Nice.
That's like the one Thanksgiving movie I can think of.
Yeah. I remember, yeah. And then... It's obviously S because it's about the time of year, but The Holdovers, like, I really loved that movie, so.
Same. I almost picked that one as a backup, too, just because it was such a good movie and I wanted to watch it again.
Yeah. And then the last one was Elf.
Honestly, that's what I thought you were going to choose.
When we
did our top Christmas movies, that was your number one with the bullet. So I thought that's
a good one.
I assumed you were choosing.
Quoting him my whole life.
Let me ask y'all this. If Brandon chose Batman Returns, does Die Hard
count?
Does that work?
It's on all the lists. Like, you've got some creative license.
No. I just didn't. Yeah. Yeah, fuck it. Die Hard.
Fuck it.
All right.
What year was Die Hard?
88? 87? Same year as this?
88.
Yeah.
Oh, we were close.
Yeah. Is there another 90s Christmas movie that's sticking out?
Let's Google it.
Because, like, my backups were, like...
I had a 90s...
Oh, sick. Jack Frost.
you want Jack Frost? Should that be the commentary episode?
That's a 98, so we could just fucking send it.
Another one on my list was Grumpy Old Men, 1993.
Hmm? That one feels less around the holidays, though. I know it is Christmas time, but that one feels like, even of the two outliers that we've chosen, that one feels less.
If I remember correctly, which it's been probably since the early 90s since I've seen it, is I think they do Thanksgiving and Christmas, so it's through the holidays. Yeah.
Yeah. Another ice fishing, like the whole movie.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the one with Arnold? Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way? That was your brother chose that like as his number five movie.
Yeah. Brandon? I was like, my brother?
No. I had How the Grinch Stole Christmas on there. Christmas Vacation, obviously.
Yeah. Classic.
That's usually the one that I'll watch every year, regardless.
Me too.
Yeah.
Let's see. Beethoven.
No.
Is that a Christmas movie?
Thanksgiving.
Damn, I was like, I haven't seen Beethoven. I don't think I've ever seen Beethoven.
1992.
Damn. What about Christmas Story? How you guys feel about Christmas Story?
That's a good one.
I love that one too. Yeah, that's a good one. I could do a deep dive on that one.
Want to?
Yeah, let's do it.
Christmas Story for the fourth one.
Sure.
Sure.
All right. Cool. All right. So next time you hear us, we will be back with, I'm assuming, A Christmas Story is probably the first movie we'll do. A Christmas Story, followed by Die Hard, followed by Home Alone, and then we'll top it off with the Tim Burton classic, Batman Returns. I'm excited. Honestly sounds like it's a pretty fun list we got going on here.
Yeah.
So, sick. I'm excited. What do you say we go ahead and cut and check the gate?
See you guys.
See ya.